Is Lipton or...
Oh, I'm starting. Hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. I trust you have had an interesting and intellectually stimulating week, and you are looking forward to only being able to, if you're in Britain, to only being able to use social media if you sign in and give them all your bank details and everything about you. And I hope all has gone well, and it's been an intellectually stimulating week, and in the increasing decline of Britain and the beginning of the Civil War. So cheers, everybody. Cheers, Nick Buckley. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Callum Barker. We have a very special guest for you today. That is the biggest Nazi in the universe. The hardened Nazi. He was there in the bunker. He was there in the bunker at the very end with Eva Braun. That is Mr. Callum Barker, the Lion of Epping. So cheers, cheers, Callum. Cheers, Lipton. Cheers, Capis, Hurligan Gurligan, Saludo, Prost, Proust, Tervis Sexy, Skoll, Yakidar, Slanger, and Slangervar, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are, of course, on my public house. It's on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York, in which we discuss psychology, stuff in the news, the decline of Britain, and academic stuff that is increasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. And as I said, we have a... Where's he gone? Where's he gone? Has he been arrested by the secret police already? Oh, for goodness sake. But we did have... He seems to have gone black now. We did have a very special guest, and that was Callum Barker, the, as I said, the Lion of Epping. Are you all right, Callum?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thank you, Ed. Just got back from work. A little bit sunburnt, but not too bad. As you know, I was in Stalingrad. I founded many terrorist organisations, according to the press, you know. And it's ridiculous, the smears these people come out with. I'm a hardened Nazi, apparently. How ridiculous.
I can't see you.
Me?
Yes.
I'm coming through all right. Are you sure?
You can't see you. It's just black.
It's black for Ed. Deary me, what's happened here?
Is it black for you, Nick? Can you see him?
I can't see Cal.
No, we can't see. It's just a black square. Never mind. I'm sure you can sort it out. All right. So, yes. So, cheers, everybody, and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. Okay. First things first. I don't know. He's sorting himself out. All right. I'll start with Nick then. So, we had this discussion before about the splitting of the vote. There is a big by-election happening in Britain. On still black, Callum, happening in Britain on Thursday, and that is the Ashton and Makerfield by-election. You must have turned the camera off, Callum. That's what you've done, I think. Unless you're trying to message me, I don't know. Message me on WhatsApp if there's a problem. Okay, so we're looking like the idea is that we mustn't vote for reform, and there's been this hysterical reaction over the weekend with this newspaper, this news, you're still black, with this newspaper thing. What's he done? Hang on a minute. Sorry, chaps. There we go. Okay, good. So then I have to remove the other Callum.
I'm back.
You're back, yeah. Okay, good. All right. Yes, there has to be this... Yes, you're there. Good. Everything's right with the world. It's fine. Anyway, there was this hysterical article over the weekend in the Daily Mail. I do think the Daily Mail need to decide whether they are respectable or not respectable, whether they are the regime or they are not the regime. Telling everybody that there are serious problems with reform, that people that are involved with Restore, the people involved in Restore have been to apparently a Nazi conference. I wasn't aware it was a Nazi conference in Porto in Portugal, and that they have hardened Nazis involved, like Callum, like Callum there. And I wonder, Nick, why do you think that this what are they trying to do? Why did the Daily Mail even care?
Aren't we all sick of this? I think it's been going on for decades and decades. Someone has to be the Nazi. Some of our political parties, one of them has to be a Nazi. It used to be Reform a couple of years ago. They were the Nazis. Before that, it was UKIP. Before that, it would have been someone else. The Daily Mail is part of the mainstream media, part of the establishment, really. And everybody now is looking at Reform UK and saying to themselves, this is the next government. So they're, because they've changed, because they've gone to the centre, they're going to be the government. So therefore, we need to support the new government and we need to attack whoever is against them. It happens to be Restore Britain at the moment. So we've got the same, it's as if they go into the library and pull out the book saying how to politically attack your enemies. Chapter one, start calling people Nazis and fascists. Heard it all before. I'm just sick of it.
Yeah, but you are sick of it, and that's hello, Callum, and that's the interesting point, though, isn't it? That surely it's become, we're weary of it. It's become a cliche to accuse people of being a Nazi. People decrease. It used to have a power. I think particularly among the older generation. Callum, can you mute yourself and then unmute yourself when you talk? Thank you. Particularly among the older generation, imagine that our grandparents or whatever, this was a powerful term, Nazi. This was the worst thing you could call somebody. If you watch something like Dad's Army, even during the war, the warden wasn't calling Captain Mannering a Nazi. He was calling him a Napoleon. So it was the most awful thing. And I wonder if it means less as people get younger. If it means less people to move away from the war.
No, absolutely. I think, first of all, it's been overused. It's been extremely overused. But then the new generation's coming through now. The Second World War is ancient history to them. Just like in Dad's Army, they called people Napoleon. And before that, there would have been probably Vlad the Impaler. There's always someone in history about 100 years ago who was deemed evil or the enemy, and you call them that name as an insult. But Nazi Germany now, but for the young people, ancient history, they don't, and our education system is so poor, they've got no idea what a Nazi is anyway.
They don't even know what I was doing this film in Leicester a year ago or so. They didn't even know when World War II ended. They couldn't even date it. Callum, are you there? Do I have to unmute you or can you do it yourself? There you go. Oh, no, you've muted yourself. Hang on. So you are now the they've now basically put a mark on your head and said hope not hate, attack this guy. What were your thoughts with regard to what happened on Sunday?
With the Daily Mail piece, I just think it's ridiculous. They've gone to the extremes. You know, hope not hate and all these activist sources, they're barely credible as it is, the amount of smears they come out, and it's terrible to see one of the biggest and most established newspapers, one that claims to be right-wing, by the way, come after not even party figureheads, not even like Charlie Downs or something, just activists on the ground knocking the doors, and to make Lorcan, for example, front page news. I think it's quite terrible. It just shows the establishment's desperation.
I mean, you were saying you're 22, right?
Yes.
And there's a big difference between being 22 and being 19.
It's 3 years the difference. Yeah.
But it feels different. I think when you're 19, you've only just left school.
Well, you've got to consider he's a teenager, isn't he? He's left school or college and he's decided to get involved in this activism. You know, I myself, I've got a job, I work for a living, I'm a fully grown man, you know. Whereas Lorcan is a teenager, and it's disgusting that a paper would throw him out there to be like the victim of a witch hunt, basically.
I mean, they put him on the front page of the newspaper, one of the largest newspapers in the country. I can't imagine going back in time to 1999 and finding myself on the front page of the Daily Mail.
What's the person's name?
His name is, he's known online as Angloid. And he's 19, and they put him on, and he was an activist in Restore UK, and they put him on the front page of the paper. But what do you think about this, Lipton? I mean, is it? My immediate reaction was this is absolute desperation, because it's a cliche. Oh, you're a Nazi. It's the reductio ad Hitlerum. It's become a standing joke, and I can't quite believe that it was stupid fall for it.
I think that the political establishment fears upper middle class white men. That's my opinion. We live in a society where builders are disliked. It doesn't matter if the builder is a left-wing tech entrepreneur or a right-wing financial executive. We live in a society where builders are not appreciated because they deviate from the norm. They are countercultural. And if people have a building mindset, they cannot be controlled. And that's why there is this great project on the left to silence right-wing dissent. And when you really read some of these articles, columns, and books, they are more objective than what you were assuming prior to reading them. As I said before, they're really, the media, these people, they're really lashing out against upper middle class white educated men. So for example, Jared Taylor, he's the son of Protestant Christians. He went to Yale. He worked as a management consultant. He's erudite, quite affable, yet they still hate him. I interviewed Jared Taylor. It's really not about the establishment suppressing the anger of white working class people, because movements are often led by intellectuals, the elites. So their aim is to suppress the upper middle class white person who has expressed a countercultural position. And when I say countercultural, I mean it is context-based. So if you were in the 1950s or the 1960s, as a conservative, then you are respected. Views that people hold then are seen as outrageous today. So yes, really the left versus the elite countercultural right. The working class people, I don't really want to call them useful idiots. Let me just say pawn. They're the pawn then.
Yes, all right. Well, some of them perhaps are, but that was one of the things that the left used to say about the BNP. They used to say, oh, the people like Nick Griffin or whatever, who are middle class, are exploiting the working class. And I don't think that's true. That's almost like saying working class people can't think for themselves and don't have agency. I think that a lot of these people were people that lived in places like Keighley in Yorkshire and whatever. They were local from there, and they were pissed off about the sudden rapid change that was happening in the crime that was happening and so forth. The idea that they're pawns, perhaps some of them are pawns, but some of them, I think, were just organized people that were sort of small tradesmen and the petty bourgeois, basically.
Exactly. I've read many of these publications. I've interacted with supposedly dissident people on the far right, and they present themselves as quite pale, and I don't think that they're doing so in order to create a reputation that's palatable. They could in reality be pale individuals. They are not as eccentric, and neither are they as right-wing as a right-winger 50, 60 years ago. They're quite pale. So we like boogeyman in simple terms. We must have a boogeyman, as Nick said. It's just a boogeyman mentality.
But I was thinking that the dangerous thing, what do you think about this, Nick, is that he's declared Rupert Lowe, like, basically, I don't care. I don't care. And what he's supposed to do, what Farage, it's like comparing Trump and Farage. Trump's attitude is, I don't care what kind of this weird system in America. Like, I get the impression that anybody can join the Republican Party or the Democrats. You just kind of register and that's that. So it's like a broad tent which everybody's in, whereas Farage is very restrictive. It's, oh, yeah, if you've been in this party, you can't be in. If you've said this, you can't be in. If you've expressed this opinion, you can't be in. Maybe the frightening thing about Rupert Lowe is he's educated, he's successful, and he just doesn't care. He's like, Tommy Robinson, yeah, whatever. He can join. Anybody can join. I don't care. And that's the don't care that's frightening.
It frightens the establishment.
You can go ahead, Nick. I have nothing else to say.
I was going to say it frightens the establishment because, again, that playbook I talked about, Chapter 2, is all about scaring the working class and scaring people into doing as they're told. That's why we have the word racist, homophobe, transphobe, you name it. We've got a word to scare you, to shut you up, to make you fearful, to get your friends to look at you differently, and that is how we control you. But most of all, that's how we control everyone around you, because they're then scared that they could be next with this pile on. But people like Rupert Lowe and Trump turning around and going, I don't care. I don't get upset about it. I'm not going to try to defend it. I'm not going to try to explain it. I'm just going to say to you, I don't care. that scares the establishment, because what do you do with someone like that? You can't talk them around. You can't scare them into doing what you want. But then compare that with someone like Nigel Farage. I've got no evidence for this, but I believe over 30 years of him being in politics and being in UKIP, I think he's been psychologically damaged by 3 decades of being called a racist. And he goes out of his way now all the time to prove to people who are not worth proving anything to that he's not a racist. He bends over backwards to do it all the time. And people see that, and it comes across as weakness.
Yes, I agree. The idea of letting hope, not hate, who are against everything good and true, to vet your candidates for you. Hope, not hate, say to you, look, this candidate, we've been through his Twitter. We've Twitter, get engaged in Twitter archaeology. And 10 years ago or 15 years ago, he said something slightly untoward, and then and thus you sack it. It seems to me to be incredibly feeble and pathetic, and it just gives them power. It tells them you are operating within their system. I mean, for example, I don't know about reform. I know UKIP had a rule that you couldn't be a member if you had formerly been a member of certain prescribed organisations. I think like the National Front and the British National Party and things like that. And as I understand it, Restore UK has no such rule.
Yeah, and there's only there's only two parties I've ever heard of in the UK, political parties, that you could join if you'd been a previous member of the BNP. The first one was Advance UK, who are now gone, and the second one is Restore Britain. Every other party, you're barred for life for being a member, even when you were 17 years old, even if you joined for 3 days, you're barred for life for joining every other political party, basically, in the UK. That can't be fair. That can't be democratic. That can't be inclusive and tolerant and compassionate to bar people for joining a legal political party when they were younger.
I bet you can join Labour as long as you do a sort of Mayor Cooper, Mayor Maxima Cooper. And so I'm sure I don't know about the Conservatives, but I know with UKIP. Callum, what do you think about this notion of not caring?
Well, I think it's quite good, actually, because it does kind of appeal to people that, you know, Rupert's genuine. He's kind of speaking, going back to the start of the conversation, he's kind of speaking the language of the working class, and that's kind of why people love it. You know, he doesn't get wrapped up in, oh, you can't do this, you can't say that. That's it. He's like a geezer, you know, oh, I don't care, get on with it. And I think it's fantastic, because we don't really have anyone like that in British politics. No one who's bold enough to not bend the knee to like organisations like Hope Not Hate. As you said, Nigel Farage climb over anyone to apologise for any calls, like gets called racist, and he'll sit there and grovel to, you know, whoever is media in the establishment and make excuses. But the fact of the matter is, that's the wrong thing to do. If people throw these silly slurs or words at you, you don't sit there and apologise and play into their word games. You've got to step over them. You know, you can't, because the moment you take the back foot and go, oh, sorry, I didn't mean this, I didn't do that, it's like you fall into their trap, and then they can just keep on attacking you and attacking you. And, you know, you don't. You just have to ignore them and step over it.
One of the things that I found as a rather frightening about, I think this is frightening for a lot of people that are in certain industries, should we say, is basically if you work for the state, if you work for the current government, it is a woke state. It's like being in a communist state, but it's woke. And effectively, therefore, you cannot dare get involved in nationalist politics and keep your job, and realistically keep your job if you work for the state. And that's the terrible situation that we have got to. So someone like you, Callum, working whatever it is, building or something like that, I can't remember what it was you said. But in that sense, you're kind of protected. But if you're a school teacher, if you're a university lecturer, good heavens, if you're a doctor or a nurse, if you work for the government, which is a huge amount of people, it's about 1 in 3 people. If you work for what is a woke state, then basically you if you're a lawyer even, and they don't even work for the government, but their professional bodies have been taken over by woke. And so there was a case, in fact, of a barrister who was disbarred because he stood as a BNP candidate. This has happened about 20 years ago. So you can't be a policeman and be involved in certain political parties, be a member of certain political parties. You can't be a fireman. The trade unions have stated they're against reform and restore.
Mm.
Not just restore, reform as well. So we live in a situation where politics is limited if you work for the state or you have a professional body that has gone woke, which most of them have. So basically you can only have sort of people that are tradesmen or whatever that are involved in politics.
And if you work for a charity. I'm blacklisted now from working in the charity sector because of my political views.
Didn't they throw you out of your own charity?
They did. But then I mounted a fight back and I made the board resign and I got my job back. But then I still had to leave a year later because the position was untenable.
But yeah, you just can't. How can you work with these people that despise you? And there's terrible tension. You can't possibly work together. It's impossible. Mm. So that's what's happened. So then we then have a politicized state, which has got basically the party, and then those that are outside the party that can have a livelihood and get away with expressing their opinions, but they must be outside, not just the state. That's not good enough. Also, any kind of professional body like law or medicine or anything like that, those people may not express their opinions. And so the only people that can do so are people that are small tradesmen, well, people working. It's extraordinary. I mean, Lipton, in Jamaica, I assume, is there an overarching state like that, or can you just say what you like?
You can say what you like. It's interesting to note that in Jamaica, people... they will never stop annoying me with the notion that that Jamaica is a predominantly black country. It is just so pathetic. But here in the UK, you can't talk about Anglo-Saxons or white people or British nationalism, because if you do, you are Nazi, you are far right. But in Jamaica, people emphasize the African heritage. It's a black country. They never stop saying it.
No, but are there certain opinions that basically a person that works for the state cannot express?
No, not at all. Not at all. Jamaicans will shout for 2 days or 2 hours and then pretend like nothing happened before. So not at all.
Right. So how have we got this into this? I'll address this to everybody. Anyone chip in? How have we got into this situation where basically Britain is, surely by any reasonable definition, it's just not free? You have to think about, even in Finland, there would be no problem being part of the state and being involved in what is called the far right. This is a fact. There would be no problem with this. But in this country, there is. There's a serious, in Britain, there is a serious problem with it, that you can lose your job.
That's not surprising.
Yes.
I keep, on this show, I keep repeating myself. England is responsive to socioeconomic changes. The British, they set the standard for institutional development. And when you are excessively responsive to socioeconomic changes, you're also going to assimilate into a declining culture or a culture that's overly political. So if the new cultural rhetoric is climate change and the net zero law, England is going to pass a pro-climate law. If the culture is England invented the regulatory sandbox. So England sets the standard for institutional development, and as society evolves or devolves, the British, they will assimilate to the prevailing culture. So that's why England is overregulated relative to elsewhere, because this is the country that first industrialized the common law, the concept of trust, the first team sports. Many of the original team sports were created in England. Associational life, that's British culture. So the Brits, even when the Brits were managing Jamaica, they were responsive to socioeconomic changes. And when you're responsive to socioeconomic changes, it can either be positive or negative. So you're just following the rhetoric. So because British institutions are built to be so responsive to cultural changes, this is the effect that we're currently experiencing.
Okay, I want to move on then. So this time last Monday, there was something almost unbelievable on the streets of Northern Ireland, on the streets of North Belfast, all of the troubles they've had, people were killed, it was terrible, they were blown up. But the idea of someone being beheaded in the street, or tempted to be beheaded in the street, and blinded, and apparently he already had problems with hearing, this guy, and now he's lost an eye, or is it two eyes? I don't know.
I think it's one.
He's blinded. So it was just unthinkable, absolutely unthinkable. And the response in Northern Ireland of both the First Minister, whose father was a terrorist, and the Deputy First Minister, whose father was a terrorist, is basically to regret that the video was seen. So it's worse that the video was seen, because it might stir up tensions against immigrants, which indeed it did, because you had a riot and people going around to areas where everyone knew these men lived, and setting fire to cars and so forth. It was that it was seen, that was the problem. And then you have them asserting, amazingly, the head of Sinn Féin, that hatred has no place in Northern Ireland, she said. And I thought to myself, well, when they killed the black and tans, that wasn't because they loved them, was it? That was hatred. It was hatred that got the Irish independence. The idea that there's no hatred and hatred has no place in Northern Ireland seems insane. But I wonder what you think about this. Nick, do we think this would make tensions worse in Northern Ireland?
I think Sinn Féin and the rest of the ruling elite in the UK and across Europe, they know they can't solve our problems. I think they've admitted that to themselves. They know they can't stop mass immigration. Some of them don't want to stop it, but they know they can't stop the problems that that then leads to. So the next best thing is try to control the information the public see. Because if immigration is not a problem, the problem seems to be the reaction of the British people to mass migration. So if we can stop them having the information, seeing those videos, then there'll be no trouble. There is a line of logic to that, especially if you're a socialist, because they love to control information and love to try to, you know, control the way people think and the way people live their lives. But for Sinn Féin, out of any political party or any politician in the UK, to talk about love and not hate and talk about, you know, we're on the side of the migrants. I mean, Sinn Féin will actually say from the 70s they were fighting migrants. They were fighting Protestant migrants who came over from Scotland. That would have been their argument in the 60s and 70s. But black migrants and Asian migrants seem to be okay now, because I think it's still about fighting the British. And Sinn Féin seem to have turned into a communist organisation. I think they want world communism. And we're only going to get that if we get rid of all the borders and all national governments and have a world government.
Well, it's interesting. It's a bit like Scottish nationalism, isn't it? I mean, Scottish nationalism is based around hatred of the English.
Yeah.
Bitterness against the English. And also virtue signalling about how moral you are and therefore how multicultural you are, but you hate the English. And Irish nationalism seems to be very, very similar. It's you hate the English or British, whatever, the British they would say in Ireland. But otherwise, oh, we're so moral, we're so wonderful, so bring in lots of foreigners. Yeah, I mean, can't the inconsistency of it? Okay, so the people that come in and take your country, if they're Protestant planters, that's a, and when I put this on Twitter, people went mad. They said, yeah, well, they were violent in the past, but then haven't you heard of the peace accords in 1998? Haven't you heard of the referendum that happened? So they chose to stop being violent. So shut up. How dare you criticise Michelle O'Neill, our elected First Minister, for being a member of Sinn Féin even during the Troubles, and that she's the daughter of an IRA member and her cousins, not everyone in their family, all in the IRA. Yeah, haven't you heard of the peace process? And now that's so we decided not to be like that anymore. So shut up. And I was like, bloody hell. I seem to have hit a nerve. Anyway, Callum, what do you think about this? In the dark.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show their priorities. It seems the government and, you know, Sinn Féin or whoever, they're just more interested in covering up the crimes against our people and defending multiculturalism. That's it. They don't want their pets getting any bad press. It reminds me of that tweet said, I can't remember the chap who said it, but it was the one about a bomb going off in New York, and then the worst consequence would be the fact that the Muslims get a bad rep for it. I'm sure you could probably recall the one I'm on about, but it's always about defending the multi-ethnic, the multicultural state, and defending this horrible experiment rather than actually standing up for the people who are bearing the brunt of the horrors. You know, they don't want it to get out. They don't want people to know. They don't want people to be angry. And it's just about keeping safe and protecting the status quo.
Yes, exactly. And they ask people not to speculate on it, and they ask people not to spread misinformation, even though these things that are apparently misinformation have turned out to be information. For example, when was it, a year ago or so, there was that, a bit more, there was that girl in Dundee that was armed with a knife and an axe. And this was all misinformation and nonsense, the idea that a migrant had hit her or the idea, whatever. This was all, and it's turned out he's been found guilty in court, this Bulgarian couple. So it wasn't misinformation. It was correct and accurate information. And you had all these people at the BBC or whatever saying, no, there's no evidence for this, it never happened, and whatever. Misinformation. And you could imagine them saying with regard to Henry Novak, but when, there's this misinformation about this boy having been murdered by the sea. No, it is correct. And the all you can do, what can you do if you're on the brink of civil war and you know it, is try and cover it up. But one thing that was interesting with the Northern Ireland thing, I don't know if anyone knows this, it was specifically Protestant paramilitaries that were out doing stuff. So I assume that the Protestant paramilitaries, if anyone in the comments is from Northern Ireland, do correct me, but they seem to have maintained an infrastructure in the way that the Catholics haven't, or because it was a Catholic area where it happened. But it was Protestant paramilitaries that came out. And interestingly, they weren't out like in Southampton in front of the police station protesting against the police. No, their attitude was, we're going to find out the people that have done this, and we're going to get them out. And no filming was allowed, and they were masked. It was a very, very different reaction, like they're used to this.
I think that was a pretty incredible response, to be honest. Like, the stark contrast to when a tragedy happens in Britain, you know, we tend to go protest outside the police station. Britain is in the main island. You know, we protest outside a police station, have our tinnies of beer and blast Sweet Caroline and have a dance and a party. In Belfast, they were setting up checkpoints, checking cars. It was like snap, and then, you're right, it was like something had happened, like there'd been a coup or something. I couldn't describe it, because it's completely unimaginable here in the mainland.
Well, presumably it was imaginable in parts of Britain in, let's say, the 50s and 60s, when parts of London were run by gangs. It's like the Crays or the Richardsons.
Well, I suppose. I mean, there's still gangs now. You've got gangs of Somalians that run about, but I can't see them setting up checkpoints and kicking in people's doors and you know, what we saw in Northern Ireland. But yeah, maybe in another time. But in a modern kind of setting, you know, if tragedy happens here, we seem to have a song and dance. If it kicks off in Ireland, they're throwing Molotovs at, you know, armoured police cars.
And do you think that's just because they've got the infrastructure to do it, or do you think they're just a sort of fundamentally more serious people?
I think it's because, I don't know, to be honest. I think maybe because there's that kind of history of sectarian violence in Northern Ireland and Ireland, and I think people here in Britain just aren't up for it, unfortunately. I think people here don't care. You know, they want to get on with their lives. They're too individualistic.
Right, so it's to do with Northern Ireland having a relatively close at hand history of violence and it being more religious, perhaps.
Yeah.
What do you think, Nick and Lipton?
I've spent a lot of time in Northern Ireland. My stepfather's from Northern Ireland. I spent nearly all my summers as a kid there. I've worked in Northern Ireland, so I know it better than the average English person. You have to remember that a lot of these young men involved in the disturbances have heard stories about their uncles and their grandfathers, about them fighting for their community, putting their lives on the line, going to jail, being blown up, being killed by the IRA, and then being told, this is what they did for you. This is a sacrifice they made, so we live here today. if you're brought up with those stories and then you see similar things happening in your community, it doesn't take much for young men to go, I'm going to be like my granddad. My job is to protect my community. And I can see that jump being done very quickly.
And presumably sorry, Lipton.
I want to see that the attitude of the establishment will only ignite further anti-immigrant riots. And it's unfortunate because average people who are not anti-Ireland will become a part of the mess. They're going to be attacked. So I saw a story recently, a lady, she was not affiliated in any way with the riots, and she was attacked. She was a young professional of African descent. So I am predicting that there will be more attacks of that nature. And people are angry. They feel like they are being erased. The multicultural project has failed. It didn't collapse. It went nowhere. It was always failing. And if these politicians don't develop the awareness to pacify the population, it's only going to get worse.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, we had on this show last week, didn't we, Morgoth? And yes. He said openly to you, basically, I think you should get out of my country.
Yeah, because Morgoth said that I am replacing him, but I'm right. Not the type to respond to such commentary. I keep the discussion elevated.
Fine. But the point is that I don't think 20 years ago, if this online meeting were possible 20 years ago, someone would have said something like that. I think that we've been pushed so far, we English people, and resentments are so strong that it spills out into someone, making a remark like that, which I thought was, I didn't think it was necessary to say that, but it was an expression of a feeling that's they've pushed people so far that they react, and it's much worse than it used to be. And so whereas 30 years ago, if you saw some woman in Muslim dress, you would, whatever. Now it's, this is a political statement and you're saying you don't want to integrate, and that's unacceptable. It's pushed people too far, which is very...
And there are no riots in Glasgow. I lived in Glasgow. Glasgow was listed some time ago as the friendliest city in the UK or perhaps in Europe. And people in Glasgow are rioting because they're upset. And the political class has not done much to neuter their anger in any way, shape, or form. And Glasgow is a beacon of hope. I lived there and I enjoyed myself in Glasgow. The people are lovely. But even those people, they have a breaking point too. And they're reaching their breaking point. I don't think that they have reached just yet, but they're approaching their breaking point. And remember, Glasgow has a history of gang warfare and violence. So it's only a matter of time before we revert to the old Glasgow.
I think so. I mean, the ice cream wars in Glasgow, famously, the level of criminality there is so appalling that it's pointless even opening shops. Everything can get nicked, and so you end up with these vans, ice cream vans, sort of thing, that sell food of all kinds as well as ice cream. And then there was wars over the patch and all this sort of thing. So, I mean, that's the thing is, I think, Callum, if the police, this goes back to Henry Novak, two-tier policing, if we don't feel that we can trust the police, then you're in a situation like the Catholics were in Northern Ireland, or even like some of the Protestants were in Northern Ireland, where you will end up, somebody will do justice for you, and that will be a protection racket.
Yeah, I think, I think the worse it gets, the more people are going to feel the state is against the average person. The police aren't your friends. And, you can only poke a dog with an iron rod so many times before it bites you, I don't like violence. I don't like anything like that, but I don't believe in it. But it's just like, it's just getting worse. There's no solution. It's getting worse. There's always these attacks every year and people are getting angry, and I don't want to see anything terrible happen.
But if you lose faith, this is one of the David Betts's model of civil war. If you lose faith, if you see the authorities as unable and unwilling to solve your problems, you'll have like South Africa where you people will come in and solve those problems, and you'll be and you will be prepared if necessary to pay for it, because at the moment the police don't bother to come unless it's hate crime. They're utterly useless. They can't really. A lot of them are short, ugly, fat little things that can't really enforce the law. And so eventually you just get to a point where you have no choice but to pay private security. And there's probably not much the police can do about it because they're so useless. Well, so then you end up with a parallel state.
So something I found quite interesting is that a lot of towns and cities are setting up their own community watch kind of groups who do like patrols at the evening and such. Not paramilitaries, of course, but they're just like people walk about in high vises to make sure, you know, safe at the end of the night out and look after each other. I suppose I can even give an example. In Epping, we had a group set up called the Epping Spartans for a short bit after the protests, and you know, they kind of milled about and did patrols up and down the high road. And then well, to be fair, Epping is quite a nice area. There wasn't really a need for them anymore. They disappeared.
We had it in Oulu in about 2018 when the Muslim grooming gangs emerged. I forget what they called themselves. So Soldiers of Odin, that's what they called themselves, which is ironic because Odin is a Norse god, not a Finnish god. But anyway, they called themselves Soldiers of Odin, and they walked around the city centre. And that was what the police were supposed to do originally. It wasn't just to solve crime, it was to prevent crime. And you prevented crime by being on the streets, being a bobby on the beat. I'm a bobby on the beat. You can tell by my pointed hat and the size of my flat feet. But they don't do that anymore. Now you have these community patrol officers or these stupid other things that they have, which are toothless. So
let me just jump in there. So I agree with both of you, setting up these parallel police projects. But I think it's worse than that. I could handle that because you could say the government can't afford it. The government's doing their best. We have to help. We've got to take responsibility for our neighbourhoods, our communities. I've been saying that for decades. But it's worse than that. We're now beginning to see the police, the government, the establishment as the enemy. Not as incompetent, but as the enemy. That's when it gets serious.
Oh, 100%. Because it's like their visceral spite for the native English population or the native British populations. You know, they it's like when there's lads, football lads out, you're getting a bit rowdy. It's police batons and riot gear. But as you saw with the BLM riot, they were taking the knee for rabid mobs. You know, it's a song and dance. But if the English people, the white people get a bit uppity, you know, it's like the state kind of jumps to the worst. It's like, that's it. We've got to put a boot in it and beat them back into submission. Mm.
Do you know what's the problem? Middle-class people in the UK are not attuned to the anti-white realities. Since I've been in the UK, I have been telling people that in the public sector, their preferences for minorities, and they were completely unaware. So middle-class white people, they are impervious to what's going on, and that's why so many of them are willing to leave their house to protest the traditional protesters. They're counter-protesters. So in Glasgow, people came out of their homes to protest the individuals who were protesting against mass immigration because they're unaware. The counter-protesters are unaware. They have no clue as to what's going on.
It's also kind of British-coded and English-coded to be against immigration, whereas we Scots, we're more moral than the English, and we're more moral, we're more pro-multiculturalism. It is an expression of our Scottishness, therefore, to hate what the English do, and the English seem to be against immigration. Because England, to be fair, is about 30% non-English, whereas Scotland is about 5% non-Scottish. But you know, anyway, it's a big part of their nationalism. I remember when I was at university in Aberdeen, in the halls of residence where I lived, this old guy, a quite likable guy, he took away. It was during the European elections in 2004, was it? And he took away leaflets that had been given by the BNP. There were all these leaflets by different political parties in the foyer because it might be upsetting to foreign students. But he openly voted for the Scottish National Party and told me that he did, and they were allowed to have leaflets. So it's this two-tier, even them. All right, we're about halfway through. So as those of you who are new, hello, 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 and welcome to the Jolly Heretic. We are online public house. We meet on Mondays at 7 p.m. UK time, 2 p.m. New York. We discuss based science and stuff in the news and psychology and stuff that's pleasingly expunged from our woke joke universities. If you are new, will you please subscribe? Will you subscribe on YouTube? Will you follow me on Twitter? That's at Jolly Heretic. Leave a like, leave a comment for the algorithm. And also tweet a complete, they completely demonetize me. So also could you subscribe on my Substack? That's jollyheretic.com, where I put all the most base stuff I don't put on YouTube, in-person interviews, vlogs, blogs, films I make. And if you like what I do, you can support me for the cost of a pint of beer a month. I don't know whether we've sold out. I think we probably have, but in case we haven't, there will be a Jolly Heretic meet and greet and film showing in London on a week today. So come along to that, and that should be tremendous fun. And you can purchase a ticket on the Jolly Heretic Substack website thing, assuming we haven't sold out. I'm not sure, to be honest. Right, next to me we have Nick Buckley, MBE. And Nick Buckley has his own YouTube channel, which is called Nick Buckley MBE. So please subscribe to that, and you can follow him on Twitter at Nick Buckley, probably MBE. I can't remember.
Yeah, everything of mine's the same.
Yeah. It's like the guy in Viz, Roger Melly, and he gets an MBE, and everything becomes Roger Melly.
I'm a big fan of Nick Buckley.
Yes, I like Nick as well. I also like that pop singer Buckley that sang that song.
Hallelujah. Nick, do you have a preference, yeah. Me or Ed? Me or Ed, which one?
Say that again, sorry.
Do you have a preference, me or Ed? He's going to say me.
Well, it has to be you, Lipson. Because if I'd have said Ed, I may have been accused of racism.
That's the thing. Black privilege. That's Lipson's black privilege. Surely I'm more useful in the dark. Okay. Speaking of dark, we have below us his videos buggered, but we have Mr. Callum Barker, the Lion of Epping, who was smeared on Sunday as a hardened Nazi or some such nonsense. And Callum is on Twitter, aren't you, Callum?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter. It's Cal, so it's C-A-L underscore and triple I. And you find me, I post videos. I do, I don't know, political commentary and all that other nonsense.
I frequently confuse you with Callum, as in ex-Lotus Eaters Callum.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, but I remember messaging you saying, what, were you stopped at Heathrow Airport by the secret police? And you're like, no. And then I realized, I thought you said you did on Twitter. No. Oh, yeah, that was the other Callum. And then I emailed... I messaged on Twitter the other Callum, but I was trying to message you, saying, do you want to come on the Jolly Heretic or whatever? And he was like, I would love to. Or do you want to come down the pub? That was it. And he was like, well, I'd love to, but I'm in America. And then I realised, again, I'd mixed up the Callums. I don't know how this happens. Okay, so, and then Callum, do you have a YouTube channel or anything, Callum?
No, not really. Nothing of the sort. I'm on other various social media platforms, but X is really where it's at. Twitter, you know, that's where I live basically. So go find me on Merck.
Go find Callum on Twitter. And then finally, we have Mr. Lipton Matthews. And Lipton Matthews, he has a YouTube channel, which is Lipton Matthews. And also, he's on Twitter, doesn't use it very much. And he has various books, most recently, Busting African Delusions, which I have reviewed, which is very good. So go and read that. Okay, we have a resident poet here at the Jolly Heretic Public House, Mr. Quinn, and he has sent the following poems for our delectation and delight. It's another establishment scheme, portraying or distort as extreme. The true way to go, aim high and vote low in order to crush the regime. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. And he also says, here's another one for Callum, as he's a new guest. We welcome the Lion of Epping to opine upon civil war prepping. But if you read the mail, even though it is stale, you think he was always goose-stepping. Excellent. Thank you very much, Mr. Quinn. Cheers, Mr. Quinn. And if you'd like to support Mr. Quinn, then you can buy his book of Jolly Heretic Poetry. Link is in the description. And you can follow him on Twitter, which is at Resident Poet. And also on YouTube at Resident Poet. So cheers, Mr. Quinn. Okay, we have three super chats. So I'm going to read those out in order, in backwards order, which is the first one, which says, at AL0220, Farrar doesn't want to be linked with the far right. Well, no, this is correct, but surely by any reasonable definition, he is the far right. I mean, he's to the right of the centre right. So he's what is he then? I suppose increasingly you could argue he is the centre right. He's been enveloped into the centre, and all of these people from the centre, like Suella Braverman and whatever other Asian MPs have joined the party. Is that fair enough, Nick?
I think it's a bit more complicated than that. On some policies, you'd say he's right. On other policies, most of his policies are quite centrist. Some of them are Thatcherite, his economic policies. What I don't like about reform and Farage is I have no idea what they stand for. I can read their individual policies and go, oh, I like that or I don't like that. But they have no vision. You know, at least with Thatcherite and with Jeremy Corbyn, they had a vision. I know where they're trying to take us. But reform just have no vision whatsoever. So you just don't know what they stand for until Farage tells you what they stand for.
And when he tells you what they stand for, which is what you were being banned for standing for a month ago, and now he stands for it, and now it's okay. Lipton.
No, I agree with you, Nick. I'm coming from a policy background, especially finance and economic policy. And beyond being anti-immigration, Farage does not seem to have a serious economic policy. So, for example, how will he fine-tune the economy? How will he transform the nature of finance in the UK? In America, finance allocates resources to entrepreneurs. In the UK, important financial executives, they manage global capital. So there's not much allocation of resources that flows to the entrepreneur. So the financial systems in the UK and America are quite different. What is he going to do to make the UK a better replica of America? Because London has lots of money, but it's being managed by global executives who are making global elites richer. It's not necessarily flowing to entrepreneurs. So when it comes to finance and economy, I don't have a clue as to what Nigel Farage stands for. I know his position on net zero and immigration, but beyond those two features of his platform, there doesn't seem to be a real economic policy.
Fine. Callum, do you have anything to say about Nigel Farage, old chap?
Not really. Apologies for the technical difficulties. Can you still hear me all right?
Yes.
Yeah, sorry about it. I think he's a weasel, to be honest. I don't like Nigel. He kind of prided himself on the fact that he destroyed British nationalism, and he's trying to do it again. He's trying to pin down, restore and clear us out. So, you know, I've always seen him as a snake oil salesman, to be honest. I don't think he provides anything in substance. And you'll notice the past few weeks he's been kind of lurching towards the right as to win back, restore voters and restore, you know, members.
Yes, and the cold rage thing. That's not something he'd have said in the past.
No, and it was a bit of a silly statement as well. You know, I do kind of agree with Rupert Lobo. He called him out for that. Nigel Farage was kind of stirring the pot there. It's like, and it was very out of character. You know, you'd at least have some kind of sympathy and have a moment of quiet, I suppose. But I don't know. It was like he was trying to make political capital out of Henry Novak's death, which I found quite distasteful.
Quite right. Okay, Maestro Mark, thank you, sir, $4.99. What do you think about Konstantin Kissin's evolution into a critic of anti-racism? I'm not familiar with it. I just know that they seem to be the ultimate example of bravery signalling. They won't have on people that they think are a bit extreme. Oh, but then they were looking into having, I think, Tommy Robinson on at one point. Or no, Nick Fuentes, was it? Because he was in the news. So it seems to me to be that they've carved out a very specific niche of looking like they're based and in favour of all kinds of fascinating ideas. Oh, but sir, but not that idea, not that idea, not that person. I mean, the fact that they've had Dr. Paul Taylor on, our erstwhile colleague, and not me, and they've had Richard Grannon on, not me, it tells me something. Have they had you on, Nick?
Yes, I went on only because of my story with the charity and Black Lives Matter and being sacked. So it was, I wasn't really political at the time when I went on.
Right, but they seem to be even stronger borders than Nigel Farage with regard to who they're prepared to interact with. Whereas someone like, I don't know, Andrew Gold, who has a similar setup, will have on people that I find shocking, like Steve Law.
If I had to stick up for trigonometry, it'd be this. They both admit that they're leftists. They both admit they come from the left and they've been on a journey. And I class them both really as sensible leftists. I disagree with them on certain topics, but they come across as sensible and they're having discussions we should have been having 10, 20 years ago. They're not on the right. They admit they're not on the right. They're on the left. But we need a sensible left.
I don't know. It
reminds me of the tale of the prodigal son. Oh, we saw the prodigal son, isn't he great? Oh, he's found God, whatever, right? Mm. But what about the older son who was never prodigal in the first place? Mm. He was just always right wing. He was always based. And then the fatted calf gets slaughtered for this prodigal son who's sodded about, been on the journey. Screw him. I like people that haven't been on journeys. I like people that are correct in the first place.
Nothing is more irritating than people who comment on controversial issues. No, but 10 or 20 years ago, they were silent. Those people turn me off. They really do. And that's why I dislike the IQ debate on Twitter so much. Because a couple years ago, those people were now managing the debate. They never had a point.
A lot of these people at ARC and whatever, these kinds of conferences, their mouth was shut 30 years ago when other people were outliers taking a serious risk, correctly prophesying everything that's happened.
Exactly.
And those people were Cassandras and no one listened to them, or worse, not listened to them. They were hounded down and shut up and unacceptable and awful and couldn't be involved in the mainstream and whatever. And they were right. They were right. And these people in the Telegraph and whatever were wrong, objectively wrong. And now they're able to come and at just the right time, like the Vicar of Bray. Like, or the Marquess of Winchester, at just the right time, they smelt the air and realised where the balance, to strike exactly the right balance between telling the truth and making money and
having
social money. State and social acceptability. And they switched at just the right time to...
Ed, I was going to say, but I've heard you speak about this before. Isn't this a clever survival strategy? To be able to see the wind changing and to jump on the winning side again, knowing when the wind changes again, you'll wait and then you'll jump again, to always try to be on the winning side.
At exactly the right side. And that's why we have so many of these girls on the far right, and they all used to be leftists. They all used to be leftists. And then they noticed, oh, it's changing a bit. Oh, I could be a big fish in a small pond. Or a sexy fish in an unsexy pond, in a man pond. And I'll switch just now.
You know what's going to irritate me, Ed? It's going to irritate me so much. A couple years from now, when genetic editing technologies are workable, they're all going to be supporting eugenics.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, they're all going to be supporting gene editing.
And they'll justify it by saying, oh, it reduces suffering.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, suffering associated with having an IQ of 100.
Exactly.
Oh, the suffering.
It's going to irritate me so much. They're going to change their men 150%.
And they'll say, you know what they'll say? They'll say, I've been on a journey. I've been on a journey from thinking eugenics was basically the Holocaust to realizing the benefits. And you, well, what about those people that were advocating it all along? What about
exactly.
Them? And those people are like the eldest son in the parable of the prodigal son, etc. It just fecks me off. It really does. Because I come from a perspective where I've never been on a journey and I've always been correct. And it's very difficult for me to watch.
You know, just like that lead.
Sorry?
Helen Andrews. Why are people talking about Helen Andrews? She's not the first one to say that feminists are destroying society.
No, but she says it at just the right time, and she has no kind of baggage to do with other interesting opinions, does she?
Exactly. I'm like, people have been saying this forever. Like, Richard Anania wrote that article, like, Helen Andrews is not innovative. Why are people talking about her all the time?
She's a girl. She has girl privilege. It's absolutely outrageous. Callum, we're going to exclude you there. Do interject if you have anything to say.
No, it's all right. I'm having mic issues, so I'm keeping the camera off. I've come from a position where I've always thought I'd be nationalist or whatever. I've always had my beliefs. Not that I came out of the womb with my worldview or anything, but you know, it's something that develops over time, and then one day you can articulate yourself and understand, oh, this is what I am, this is what I believe. And I've always thought this way. But I do think there are people who genuinely have changed their minds and hearts, and you've got to be able to win people. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to win an election. You know, you can't really exclude these people. But
yeah, you're right. But we should be clear that they are cowards.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, definitely. You know, there's people who say in public, oh, I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to vote for whatever party, and then they'll quietly tick the box in the ballot box, you know, tick for the party they said they wouldn't vote for. And, you know, there are people, as you said, who kind of smell the wind in the air, especially some of these egos, and they're just trying to jump on board to, they see, oh, this is a hot thing. You've got to be based now, you get an audience. But at the same time, I don't blame them. Every time an ego pops up who's based in our kind of way of thought, it gets a billion followers, so it's like, why wouldn't you do it?
Yep. Isn't that exactly what the Tory MPs did, who all jumped to reform? One week they were completely criticising and slagging off Reform UK. They're Nazis, and the next week, I've now defected to Reform UK because I think they're the solution to it. It's like, oh, do you think we're idiots?
I've now defected to Reform UK because I've been on a journey.
Yeah.
Fuck off. No, like, you haven't been on a journey. You've realised that your career in the Conservative Party is not going to get any further, and the wind is blowing Reform's way, and you're a bit antisocial and a bit slightly braver than the average Tory, and so you go over. That's what you've done. Fuck off. Like, no. You could have, like, a brave man could have defected to Reform long before she did.
They say a week in politics is a long time, don't they? But it's like, outside of that, people see what happens. You know, we've got memories. We understand. You were a Tory. Who's that woman? That Natalie, the old woman who was responsible for the digital hate crime bill or whatever. I don't know. But
Nadine Dorries.
Ah, she was an MP, wasn't she?
Yep, she was. Yeah, she was a minister. She created the Online Safety Act.
Yeah, that was it. Sorry. Didn't, you know, articulate myself then, but exactly. And then she's on the timeline complaining about the consequences of it.
Robert Jenrick letting in loads of immigrants as immigration minister and then complaining about the consequences of it.
Well, it's important to note in terms of Robert Jenrick, he was gloating about it like just over a year ago. And the fact that saving all those Afghanis were a success, when the stats show that the Afghanis are the most kind of vicious and violent people we've imported. I believe they're over 21%, so 21 times more likely to commit sexual crimes. It's ridiculous.
The thing is, though, there's no, as other Callum would emphasize, there's different ethnic groups in Afghanistan. You know, some of them are into the boys and some of them are into the girls. I mean, it's
yes,
they vary.
Appreciate the clarification.
Yeah, exactly. They're cowards and they're bastards, and I do hate them. And it's just not good enough. It's just not on. I know so many people like this. And if you're watching, and maybe I like you on some level, but they're exactly behind the scenes. It's all, oh yeah, you're making a very good point, but we can't have you saying this on GB News. Not yet. Just not yet. If we did it, the interview would happen, and then somebody would say, no, this goes against our values or whatever. But eventually, they'll be, I'm sure, it will shift and they'll be absolutely pro.
Let me give a quick example. I won't repeat your name. So, Balaji, the Indian entrepreneur, said that India is 10 times Israel and he wanted to be easy for Indians to get a visa anywhere. That's diaspora lobbying. Smart groups engage in effective diaspora lobbying, like the South Koreans. This lady on Twitter, she said, Balaji's comment reflects smart people working together. But it's more than that. It represents tribal lobbying, and tribal lobbying can overturn policies to favor foreign groups. So today she's saying it is just smart people working together. But when the tide changes, I can bet that she's going to change her mind too.
I'm sure. Right, we have another super chat from Law for Error. Hang on. Law Error 2B. Thank you. This person says, High Court versus University College Dublin cancelled after being labelled racist solely because I'm American. No views expressed, reports fabricated, CCTV access denied. I'm sorry to hear about that. What would be on the CCTV that would be racist? I've absolutely no idea. Good. Moving on then. So the next issue I was going to look at is the social media ban, which we have alluded to, of fake grieving families. Let's do social media ban. So I think that I'm saying I managed to last until I went to university without using the internet or having a mobile phone.
That's not infeasible. When I was in high school, I was robbed, so I didn't like to take phones to school.
Yes. So I'm saying they don't need internet and they don't need smartphones. So they will get around this social media ban. It's insane. It's stupid. I'm sure you can get around it somehow. So the solution is to just ban young people from having smartphones. And they can have like Nokia-type phones where they can text their friends or whatever. I coped without a smartphone until I was about 39. I only had to get a smartphone because the other phones weren't available anymore. And I had to get a smartphone.
Exactly.
So I'm saying that the things that can go on. That if let's say you're getting bullied at school because you're ginger or fat or whatever, that stops when you go home from school. But no, if you've got this internet thing, it doesn't stop. It carries on. And there's websites where they can set up slagging you off. And there's whatever. It's there forever. So I think the solution is that these people shouldn't be allowed to use the internet. That's what I think. Nick?
Well, I've got to agree with you, to be honest. I know there's been a lot of uproar with the social media bans. But, you know, I don't want kids online, like the amount of propaganda. All you've got to do is install TikTok, and I did it the other day because I had to set myself a TikTok up. I was swiping, and after about 10 minutes of swiping, I was just getting like blatant Green Party propaganda, and I was like, my little sister uses this app, right? And I didn't put any kind of settings in there or anything, and it's almost predatory. You just get this propaganda beamed into children, and you know it does radicalize them, not radicalize them, but you know, it's propaganda. And I think there are people out there who try to get to your kids and try to groom them into whether, you know, whether it's furries or politics or whatever. But you know, kids should be kids. They should be kept off the internet. They should. It's a tool, you know, that should be kept away. It's like driving. You know, it's not a God-given right. You're not just going to put a 12-year-old at a car seat because he can. It should be the same with phones. It should not phones, but the internet.
Or something that can affect you for the rest of your life. So I remember, like, I think back. So when I was, let's say, 15, I wrote a novel. Okay. Now, looking back on it, that novel was really bad. Obviously, it was juvenilia. I sent it to some publishers, it was rejected, understandably. Now, had I had been born in the year 2000 rather than in 1980, It's perfectly possible I'd have self-published that novel on the internet, isn't it? And it would have been rubbish and it would have been embarrassing. So I'm glad I didn't. But that's the crazy situation these kids are in. And when you're young, when you're like 15, you don't really think about the future that much. You don't, you know, you don't really understand the full consequences of your act. You are a minor. You are not an adult. But the internet allows you to literally publish. I mean, I had a girl that I interviewed on the Jolly Heretic over a year and a half ago called Elizabeth Heverin. Her name is, and she got in serious trouble for things that she published on the internet at 14 years of age. And you shouldn't be in a situation where you can publish things at 14 years of age. And that doesn't mean that all adults surely should, we have to prove our age so we can use Twitter. No, it should just be they don't use the internet. These kids should just not use the internet. That's what I...
Well, I don't agree. I think the internet, like AI, is a beautiful invention. I'm younger than you, Ed. I was born in the 90s. When I was in high school, other people were on Facebook. They were on MySpace. I had no interest in being on Facebook or MySpace. And when I went on the internet, I went to read ebooks. I read Murray Rothbard. I watched Ayn Rand videos, and I learned quite a lot.
You read Did 6 Billion Really Die? And yeah, sure. Fine. But you were an exception. You know, you were an unusual 13-year-old.
Yeah, I read many books. I discovered Richard Lynn on the internet. I discovered a lot of good literature on the internet. And I think
all young people
should have that right.
Right, but then the problem is that once they use the internet, then, of course, all they have to do is type in big tits or whatever, and then a whole world is opened up to them, which in our generation, you'd find the porn fairies had left a stash of mags behind a bush or something once in a blue moon, and otherwise you never saw porn. They did that in 1995 along the A3, the porn fairies. They left a stash of porn, and me and my friend Tom Hills... we found it. But
well, I was about to say, Ed, like, all it takes is for a kid to Google big boobs or something. The next thing you know, he's got a porn addiction for life.
It'd be big asses.
Whatever your preference is, but you know what I mean. There's just no restrictions. They can Google anything, just as any of us here can. And I think it's too much power for kids. Yeah.
In this era of ebooks and cloud and AI, so many young people can go online, visit a pirate website, and read your books for free.
I know, which I object to, Lipton, and I've told you to stop stealing my books, you bastard. Right? I've told you, stop stealing Ed's books.
I'm still waiting for Breeding the Human Herd. When is that going to be available online for free?
Just buy it. Buy the book, Lipton. It's only about £20. I told you I will give you a copy of the Quaker Question when I see you next week.
Okay.
And possibly even the James Watson book if I can find one. But stop stealing my content. I've got a book going to be published in August on borderline personality disorder in women. And it strikes me that you're already thinking of stealing, aren't you? Have you thought of stealing it?
Maybe not.
Maybe not. It hasn't been published yet. Have you thought of stealing it?
No. Women with borderline personality disorder are just unhinged. I don't find them that interesting. They're just lunatics.
Well, that's not what my book argues. But anyway, there you go. All right. So moving on then to the next issue. We're on social media ban. So I'm saying, wait, we need to conclude this. So the problem I'm saying...
Before you conclude, can I jump in?
Yes.
Yeah. The internet is a wonderful tool. But it's a tool. It's like owning a gun, owning a car. It's dangerous, and we need to educate young people how to do it. But my big concern over this isn't the Labour government trying to protect our children, because first of all, most of that responsibility lies with parents, not with the government. And my second point is they don't care about our children. The grooming gangs show that. Transgenderism shows that. What they're trying to do is put their first foot in the door of controlling social media, because once they can control it for kids, they'll start controlling it for everybody else. This is the first step in attack on freedom of speech online.
Well, presumably they're inherently controlling it for adults, because as an adult, you will have to prove you're an adult to use social media.
But then they can't control what you say. But then in the future, they can add things on for social media companies to have to do. These topics now you cannot discuss online. These topics you can still discuss online, but now you're going to have to register your name, your address, your date of birth, your social security number. They're going to use it to try to A, identify the people they want to identify, especially anonymous accounts. But it's also about, like we said at the beginning with the Belfast problem, mass migration and murdering nutcases from Sudan are not the problem. Us getting the information is the problem. This is about controlling the internet and controlling social media.
Right, and they've already done a great deal to over the last 25 years to control the internet. I mean, remember when YouTube was just a free-for-all?
Yeah.
When you could just do what you wanted. You put what you wanted on YouTube, say what you wanted, do what you wanted. There was no community guidelines, which aren't guidelines, they're laws. There was none of that crap. You could just do what you wanted. And governments realized that things had moved over to the internet, and therefore they started to become interested in the internet, because the internet was a kind of a wild west where you could just, they took them time to realize that things had shifted to the internet and the internet had influence. And it was Trump's election which finally showed them the influence of the internet and what the internet can do. And that's when you had this massive clampdown on free speech on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter and whatever. And then Twitter's gone against the grain. Mm. Facebook has gone against the grain to compete with Twitter. And so the only one that still clamps down heavily is YouTube, which, of course, and so it's frightening for them. Yeah, but surely, as an adult, you will have to prove you're not a child. You'll have to sign in the UK if you're in the UK. And unfortunately, a lot of people are far too lazy to get a VPN. And so then they will just not use these platforms to express
themselves. I have one.
Yes.
I have a VPN.
Yes, I have one. I had one for a while, but it annoyed me to... I had one so I could watch the darts final in January. But it annoyed me to that I would go into the computer and automatically I'd be online, but I'd be in Japan or something. I don't want
in the Netherlands.
I want to be in Finland, where I live, and where there aren't restrictive laws yet on the internet. I'm perfectly happy to be in Finland. And this was a problem, so I deleted the VPN. It did allow me to watch the darts final, which is always good. Do you like darts, Callum?
Sorry, not really, to be honest. I've never been much of a sporty person. Not that darts is sport. I'd argue it's not sport. I don't. Do you think it's sport, Ed, darts?
Yes, it is sport. There is a specific body type that makes you good at darts, i.e. being fat. Being fat. Yeah.
Sorry, go on. Don't let me.
No, you're going to say.
Well, I was just about to say, I think sports has to be like physically challenging, and I can't see darts really fulfilling. No.
What you're saying it's not physically challenging to stand a considerable distance from the board and throw the dart into the treble 20 three times.
I'm good at it, but I just mean you just wave your arm about it, essentially, don't you?
No. It is a very specific primal skill to be good at chucking things in the right direction. It's how we get food. But anyway, I don't know what to say about that. We can't agree on everything. But I do.
Ed's clamping down on free speech now. Ed's clamping down on free speech.
I accept Callum's view. He's wrong, but I accept his view that darts is not a sport. But you know, it's anyway, dodgy. All right, now next thing is we have evidence that the isn't it very interesting that whenever there is a person who is violated by a migrant, the media says that these people have said a certain set of words which is highly redolent of what the last victim's family had to say. And we saw this very quickly when we two times in a row, when it was the what the father of Henry Novak said in public versus his press release, and also what the Northern Irish man that attacked the Sudanese chap with a curling stick, what his press release was. And it seems fairly obvious that this has been written by, is someone saying Riku in the comments, this has been written by the government and people in a state of stress because they've just been in a fight or in a state of utter grief because their, you know, their relative has been murdered, will just side off on it. And this allowed in Parliament Keir Starmer to say, oh, you're going against the wishes of Henry Novak's dad. By stirring up a feeling about this, but in reality, it was probably just something that he had signed that had been written by civil servants, and I think that's very manipulative and quite appalling.
Of course it is, and you can imagine that conversation. We understand your son has just been attacked. We understand your son has lost an eye, physically pops out of his head, and the other eye has been stabbed up, so he's completely blind. They try to solve it. We understand that's happened to your son. But what we don't want now is dozens of other people's children being killed on the streets, just like your child, you know, has almost been killed. Is that what you want? Do you want your son, terrible thing that's happened, do you want that to be the cause of mass violence, mass death? And of course, these people in a state of shock going, I don't want that. I don't want that. That's how they manipulate them. And for the record, if I'm ever attacked, my head's chopped off, or I'm killed, riot. Riot and kill them all. That's my solution to that. There's my statement before it's even happened.
If I'm ever killed, avenge my death.
Yes.
In a legal way, but avenge my death. Okay, we have a question from at Law Era 2B. Called racist after riots. Class said don't come back, didn't till exams, interrupted repeatedly by students, went to address issues, forced out. Reports completely BS. CCTV clips show what I said, not report. Okay, thank you, sir. I really don't. I'd have to have more sort of detail. I mean, don't feel free, you know, thank you for your super chat. It's very kind of you. But I don't really understand.
I'd second that. I'd second.
We kind of need the context. Thank you very much for your support. And I hope that, that things go well for you, but no, it is manipulative. It is horrible, and it's evidence of a very frightened state that they need to basically interfere with the news, plant stories. It's also emerged that there was some case of some guy that drove into a mosque, and people came out to beat him up, and then there was a story about this imam that came out and said, no, don't be like that. That's not the Muslim way, and it turned out that it was just made up. It was just a story that was planted. So they are planting false news to try to manipulate us to accept what's going on. And newspapers like the Daily Mail are colluding with them, it seems, to accept this. Again, this is the kind of thing that happened in the Soviet Union when I was a kid. This is not what is supposed to happen in Britain. Well, you remember that thing when it was the riots over Southport and they just planted this news story that they were going to be riots in various cities all across the country. And then, of course, they didn't happen. And it was just sort of anti-fascist activists that turned up. And then all the newspapers ran the same headline, which was, fascism defeated or whatever. It was just a lie. It was just a cycle. Mm-hmm. And for all the newspapers to do it, just shows you that it's a lie. So this is just underscores the point that we are in a kind of soft communism. That soft communism is telling us that it is the worst possible sin if you live in Wigan to vote for Restore Britain on Thursday, going back to the key topic. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you don't remember communism, do you, Callum? Because you were too young. Oh, he's gone offline. But me and Nick do. Lipton, probably not so much.
No.
And you've always told, oh, you live in a free country. We live in, we're free here, and they're not free. And we've allowed that to go. Okay, finally, in terms of the eugenics that Lipton and I were talking about earlier, I find this incredible. It's so depressing. The son of a murderess who murdered an elderly lady in Oldham in 1971 by pushing her dentures down her throat and then stuffed her body in a wheelie bin, spent her pension on chocolate and took the wheelie bin. This woman took the wheelie bin. She was 14 years old. Took the wheelie bin to Rochdale Canal and chucked her body in the canal. She went to prison until 2013. She was in and out of prison. In 2022, she had a son, presumably by a thoroughly filthy fellow. Her mother was not able to adopt this child as she had its previous child because the grandmother was struggling with breast cancer. And so the child was adopted by a gay couple by the names of Jamie Varley, a school teacher, and John McGowan Fazakerley, a finance manager. And they raped him, beat him up, took indecent photographs of him and conveyed them to people, and then choked him to death. Did Varley, and then pretended he drowned in the bath. And I was just thinking, like, what chance did this boy have? Mm. What chance? And I was saying to Nick before we started that on average, adoptive parents are less abusive on average than normal parents because there's a heavy screening process for adoptive parents. But it seems to me that because this was a homosexual couple, it may have been somewhat under somewhat a certain degree of pressure. But it's just awful. It's just like you look at the poor boy, this poor child, Preston, has just absolutely no chance at all. What do you think, chaps?
I've done a lot of work in safeguarding. Obviously, I've worked with children for 20, 30 years, stopped girls being raped, stopped one boy being raped, had paedophiles prosecuted. So I've done my fair share of work on this. But this is just another example of safeguarding failures because people tick a box. The reason why this couple got this child is because they were gay. Isn't that progressive? Social workers have got pressure. We can announce this to the press. Isn't this amazing? We've got men now adopting children. We need some lesbians now. We need some black disabled lesbians with Maori face tattoos. If we only could get one or two of them to adopt children, we'd look even better then. This is box ticking that never put the safeguarding of that child first. Some of it will be the woke social workers and some of it will be the system of getting extra credits, extra box ticking, and managers patting each other on the back that they can report it up the chain to the lead counsellors on wokeness, how great we are now. This child has been let down from the very... I mean, this child was let down by his mum. I mean, that's his mum. I mean, bloody hell, that's a bad start in life. But then to be taken by the state, who should protect you, to be handed over to evil, violent pedos to be abused. But should it shock us? Because hasn't the state been doing that with little white girls for 30, 40, 50 years?
One of the things they didn't report in the Daily Mail, but they reported, well, I read about this, but they reported it in the Crown Prosecutor, he had bruises to his bowel.
Yeah. And we know how and why.
Right. Bruises to his bowel.
Mm.
I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable. And the grandmother said she didn't like the idea of two men adopting her child, but she was told these were wonderful people.
Mm.
And one thing that her grandchild, sorry, and one thing that stuck out to me, I was saying to you before the show, was they took him on they had him for 4 months, and they took him on 3 foreign holidays during that time. And I just thought to myself, shouldn't you be focusing on looking after and bonding with this baby and giving it routine and order and structure, yeah, which it hasn't had because it's been in foster care and whatever, right? Rather than taking it, that tells me that they're not willing to change their lifestyle at all for the good of the baby. Absolutely awful. All right, well, on that happy note, thank you, chaps, for tuning in. And remember to subscribe and all that malarkey. And thank you, Callum, for coming on. Unfortunately, it's been a bit of connectivity difficulties, but what can we do? And tally-ho, chaps, and see you soon. And goodbye.
Okay.